Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:20 on March 12th. Present, we have Representative Thompson, Representative Sadler, Representative Johnson, Representative Miller, Representative Holmes, and myself, Chair Olson. We've got just about a full committee. We have two bills on today's agenda, House Bill 275 and House Bill 337, and we'll be starting off with 275, retiree benefits, colorectal, and drug benefits. Bob, or Representative Lynn and Mike. What, two chairs or one?
Sure. Yeah, two chairs. I don't know the answer. He can give it to you.
I'll make one up.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the committee for
hearing this. Can you state your name for the record?
Representative Bob Lynn, representing District 31 in South Anchorage. And this bill is something that can affect everybody in the state, no matter what district they reside in. And the bill is all about two things, saving money and saving lives. Here's how it came about. Usual pharmacy I go to in Anchorage, the Fred Meyer's pharmacy on Abbott up there. I went there to get some routine medications for myself and for my wife. And the pharmacist there, a fellow named Chuck Barnett, came up and talked to me about this situation. And he started talking about the difference between generic drugs and name brand drugs. And his wife happens to be a retired state employee. And he talked about the number of people coming in and more or less demand the brand name as compared to generic. And talked especially about the state employees, because state employees make up quite a bit of the business. So how many do we have, Mike, state employees?
Mike, can you say your name for the...
My name is Mike Sika. I'm staff representative Lynn. This bill would affect about 14,000 public retirees that are pre-Medicare age, which is 65, and that doesn't include their dependents.
Okay. Now, you started talking about the difference between a brand name and a generic drug. And the only difference may be just color or shape or the inactive ingredients, but the differential in cost between the brand name and generic is absolutely staggering. And I'd like to have somebody give this to members of the committee.
Conrad.
And this is a list of drugs that Mr. Barnett, the pharmacist, presented to me. And on that list, probably everybody in this room takes one or more of these medications. And here's some examples of the difference between brand name and generic. Zofran, $3,204 for brand name, $10.35 for generic. Aflexer, $1,325 for brand name, $23.40 for generic. Pilosec, Oprimazole, I think is how I pronounce it, generic. That's $714 versus $20.85. And Leukophage, that's a diabetes medication, $91.96 versus $1.32. And that's for a prescription of 90 days. So that's just amazing differential in cost. The obviously, the potential for saving is great. This bill proposes that state employees, or anybody for that matter, but state employees get a brand name, do not get the brand name, they get the generic drug, and if they do want to have the brand name drug, that they pay the difference. And the only exception would be if the doctor has a prescription that says a brand name only, or if there is no brand name available. Otherwise, they would get the generic, but poor choice. They could get the brand name if they're willing to pay the difference. And so a tremendous potential for savings, and that's where colorectal screening, the second part of this bill, comes in, which is a life-saving measure. Currently, retired state employees under Medicare age, which is 65, are not covered for colorectal screening. It's amazing to me that Alaskans who are in prison can get the benefit of screening, but retirees under the age of 65 cannot, and I suppose they could always go to prison to get the benefit. My staffer here, Mike Seeker, has done an exceeding amount of work on this bill, a lot of research, and I'd like to have him cover some of the details and respond to some of the questions. That's why I give him the big bucks. Again, this bill proposes to save money and to save lives at the same time, and I hope we get favorable consideration of this bill, and that's respectfully requested.
And again, my name is Mike Seeka, staffer, Representative Lynn. And I I'll go through the bill real quickly for you. And if you just go to page one, what we're doing there simply is, we're adding a new paragraph that extends colorectal screening coverage, which is preventative as opposed to diagnostic. People don't have to wait for symptoms. You heard a similar bill to this last spring, HB 11. And you'll be hearing from some of the same people. And I think you're familiar with it. But and again, I'll cover a few points after I walk through the bill. Again, we're extending coverage to this group. Basically, there's a public retirees in the judicial system, the teachers' retirement system, the public employees, and the former retired public officer systems. And like Representative Lynn said earlier, we figure it's about 14,000 people, not including dependents, who are pre-Medicare age. They're the only major group left in the state that don't have this important coverage. I put a New York Times story in there. It's been established this is a life-saving technique, and it's a shame. It's a problem that's crying out for a solution right now. And we had talked to corrections in this room. We were impressed to find that they also have screening for inmates according to American Cancer Society guidelines. So anyhow, we put that in there in paragraph 13. They'll be covered. Paragraph 14 basically takes that same group, and it still allows the policy to cover brand name drugs if there's no generic equivalent available, or if a doctor, a provider, or a pharmacist insist in writing that the brand name should be provided. There are certain medicines from the research I've looked at, some cardiac medicines, some psychiatric medicines where the formulation may be different, and in that case they would prescribe those. And of course there's also the exception if a beneficiary still wants the brand name, that beneficiary could pay the difference. And as Representative Lynn told you earlier, he first came across this generics component of the bill, and we were looking for a way to use those savings for something beneficial. We had seen HB 11 had a large fiscal note. We thought, what better thing we could do than to use those savings to cover the colorectal screening, which is such a high priority with so many of the people we dealt with. You'll hear again from the American, and I want to thank the American representative wants to thank, Lynn would like to thank.
You both done.
We've been working with the American Cancer Society. It's been very educational. We've been working with the administration, Division of Retirement and Benefits, with the Retired Public Employees Association, with AARP, and we're hoping that we may have changed the calculus on this to have it pay for itself. You'll see there's three fiscal notes in there, and I'll just talk off the top of my head. I saw there was one from the Division of Insurance that was basically zero. I saw the one from Retirement and Benefits. I'd like to apologize. I handed out a document late to your staff. It was the 2012 Buck study. Again, I'm speaking off the top of my head. It shows that the cost of a colorectal screening cancer program for this group we're trying to cover, would be about $3.194 million, and the savings through our generics components would be about $3.23 million. So we're thinking we're going to save maybe, just looking at these figures, $40,000 in the first year. You also have another fiscal note, Division of Retirement Benefits, saying a one-time cost of $26,000 to change the brochures, get the advertising out. And there's another fiscal note there that we got today, and someone from Hess will explain that. I was a little puzzled by it. It was a little complicated for me to understand. It had to do with Medicaid patients that were preferring a brand name. And I'll let them speak to that, but I want to point out that in 2010 there was a Medicaid task force that is recommending the state go more heavily towards generics, and I don't know if that was figured into that fiscal note, but either way, when you look at what we're trying to do here, I don't even think $80,000 is that much for what we're trying to cover. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Sadler.
Reliable. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just while it may be in the packet someplace, I'm kind of trying to assemble my fiscal notes and stuff, but what's the cost for the colorectal screening that this would cover? Just if someone were to put cash in the barrelhead, what would it cost?
About
3.2 million, roughly.
I'm sorry, like per individual, you know, if I wanted to go
you know, it depends. I was, through the chair, I was one of the people that plans to testify today is a retiree called David Allweiler. He explained to me that when he went, and he can only go if he has symptoms, so they told him it's going to cost you anywhere from $1,800 to $6,000, depending on what we find. If we find polyps, it's going to be more expensive. If we don't, and it's going to be pretty routine. So I think it's a sliding scale, and I think the Division of Retirement and Benefits has had an average cost. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it was about $3,000 to $4,000.
Okay. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was there any thought given to applying the generic section to current public employees as well as retired public employees? Sounds like it's a big cost saver.
Yeah. Through the chair, we really didn't think of that because what we were trying to do was to cover the costs, to take advantage of the savings with the retirees and then use it to cover the cost of colorectal screening. But I could tell you that it's amazing what you remember after reading all the stuff. In 2010, the Division of Retirement and Benefits put out a newsletter explaining through the voluntary use of generics how much the plan has saved. The active employees saved about $414,000, whereas those under the retiree plan in 2000 alone saved something like $7.6 million. If you look at the active employee plan, it's got a much higher copay, and I would guess that the higher your copay, the more you have people using generics. I think under the retirees plan, there's only a difference of a copay of $8 and $4, depending on the brand or the generic.
Yeah, I'm just guessing, but I think it would probably be prevented by the contracts with the employees under their, we've got, I don't know, 8 or 10 different units,
yeah.
More than that. And I think that would be the problem on doing it on the active employees. I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
Okay.
Representative Johnson. So you want to walk us through the sectional?
Through the chair. Real quickly, Section 1, Paragraph 13 just extends the coverage to ASA 1425 is our teachers, 2225 is the judiciary, 3935 is PERS, and 3937 are former public offices. We're now extending colorectal screening, basically a preventative test for that one group that's not covered. That's what Paragraph 13 does. And then paragraph 14 is the one that increases the use of generics by having the plan basically allow the beneficiary to choose between brand name and generic, but pay the difference unless, of course, a doctor or a pharmacist insists the brand name should be used or if there's no generic equivalent there. And then finally, section 2 is just the we're using the definition for generic drug as in AS 08-80480. And I can tell you what that definition says if you'd like. It basically says an equivalent drug product means a drug product that has the same established name, active ingredient, strength or concentration, dosage form, and route of administration. It is formulated to contain the same amount of active ingredients in the same dosage form and to meet the same compendia or other applicable standards for strength, quality, purity, and identity, but may differ in characteristics such as shape, scoring configuration, packaging, excipients, including flavors, colors, preservatives, and expiration time. And I would like to add, although it's not in the definition, it's a lot cheaper. And through the chair, also in your packet, you'll notice that I put something on generics. I found it on the state site. It basically says generics usually are anywhere from 70 to 90% cheaper.
Well, with that, seeing no further questions at this point in time, I think we'll open it up to the people in the room. We've got Gary Miller, who's signed up. Thank you very much, Representative Lynn.
Thank you.
My name is Gary Miller. I live at 20135 Cohen Drive, Juneau, 99801. I'm here representing retired public employees of Alaska. I have a letter I'm going to read in to the record from our president, Bob Dahl. The Retired Public Employees of Alaska, RPEA, is gratified to offer its support for your draft bill, HB 275, to require that retiree medical insurance coverage include colorectal screening and colonoscopies. In fact, providing this coverage has been a major objective of RPEA for several years. We hope that the Alaska legislature will seize this opportunity to offer coverage that makes sense for both retirees and the state. The bill will also include the use of generic prescription drugs, a goal that RPEA has pursued among its members for many years in our continuing effort to reduce the cost of health care. Some of our members are concerned with a mechanism to trade off the cost of colonoscopies against the savings from increased use of generic drugs. While we applaud the effort, should I get closer? While we applaud the effort to increase both health concepts, the dollar values resulting will have an uncertain impact on our members. Accordingly, we hope that the final version of HB 275 will incorporate a sunset provision of 5 years in order to ensure a future review of the results it has produced. Buck Consultants, in their letter of November 29, 2007, report on their effort to estimate return on investments for adding colonoscopy coverage to the retiree plan. That letter included in part, quote, "We believe an explicit colon screening diagnostic provision in the retiree plan will prove financially positive over time," end quote. As long ago as August 29, 2005, the American Cancer Society Alaska office wrote to then Commissioner of Administration Ray Matyashowski, reporting the results of a study by the Lewin Group, a nationally recognized health policy consulting firm located in Washington, D.C. Based on the results of that study, the society reported, quote, "Our final conclusion is there is no economic reason for insurance plans not to cover the full range of colorectal cancer screening, and there are tremendous life-saving benefits for doing so." The Congress has included in the Affordable Care Act of 2010 coverage for colorectal cancer screening. For state employees covered by Medicare, such screenings are a major step forward in the effort to combat this issue. Retirees under 65 years of age, covered only by the state medical plan, are left to combat this threat at their own expense, an inconsistency that we find difficult to understand. While the Buck analysis is useful in supporting the goals of HB 275, it is merely a statistical and financial document. It does not include any consideration for the number of fellow retirees, among them who will someday be current Alaska state legislators, who will contract colorectal cancer and whose prospects for survival will be vastly enhanced if the cancer can be detected early. While the financial rationale for HB 275 should be enough to draw the support for the bill, I hope that the legislature will not overlook the important humanitarian dimension of a condition which all of us may face at some time. RPEA is proud to have the opportunity to endorse HB 275. And signed, Robert Dahl, that's our president. I brought copies so everybody can have a copy of this.
I think Conrad right behind you will handle that. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Linda Hall in the room, I believe for questions only, but anybody have any questions for Linda?
She's hiding, so I think it's questionable.
Linda's questionable.
And that finishes off the people in the room temporarily. Chad Hope. And Anchorage Pharmacy Program Manager, Division of Healthcare Services. Are you with us, Chad?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. My name is Chad Hope. I'm pharmacy program manager with Alaska Medicaid. I'm essentially calling in to be available to answer questions on the fiscal note for Department of Health and Social Services.
Oh, we had you down as a comment. I apologize on that, but any questions? Nope, you got off light.
All right.
Thanks again for joining us today. Dr. Paul Davis, Anchorage.
Yes, they unmuted me. Did they just call on me, Paul Davis?
I had Paul Davis, but Pat Davis will work.
No, it's Paul Davis. This is Paul Davis calling from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm the medical director for the Alaska Native Medical Center Colorectal Cancer Screening Program. I also work for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in their screening program, as well as I've worked in Dillingham and Seward and many parts of the state, providing colonoscopies and colon cancer screening for Alaska Native people as well as Alaskans at large. So I wanted to make a comment and offer myself for any questions that your committee might have for me. So basically, we know that colon cancer is a major killer and a major problem, the second highest cancer killer of Americans. It particularly hits the Alaska Native population hard. One in 19 Americans will be diagnosed with colon cancer before they die, and that's twice for Alaska Native people. So one in 8 or 9 Alaska Native people will be afflicted with this cancer killer, and it's a preventable cancer. This is one of the few. Unlike lung cancer, where you can't screen, this cancer can be found in a stage years before it actually turns into cancer. So it's a little like cervical cancer that way and pap smears. But it's actually more cost effective than pap smears, which have been well accepted since 1960. In 1960, cervical cancer killed more women than any other cancer. And now there's no reason for a woman to die from cervical cancer if they get screening. Well, colon cancer is like that. We know that people start growing polyps in their precancerous polyps in their 40s. They are at risk in their beginning at age 50 for the average risk population, and it's life saving. We know that it's life saving. We knew that it helped prevent that removing polyps helped to prevent cancer, colon cancer, but 2 weeks ago in the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Sidney Winawer and his colleagues in Boston published a study that showed that there's more than a 50% decrease in death rate from cancer by just having a single colonoscopy and removing polyps, you know, at age 50 to 65. And that's incredible. That's great news. And in 2007, our governor, Frank Murkowski, signed into law that any insurance company that does business in the state is required to offer colon cancer screening. And yet our own retirees, you know, are not given that same privilege. So, you know, I'm here to say we need to offer the retirees that have worked for our state, and, you know, between age 50 and 65 before they become eligible for Medicare, they don't have this benefit. And we require it by law, you know. And what I said back in 2007 was that finally our Alaska state governor was paying attention to the Alaska gas pipeline that really needs to be scoped out. And I stand by that. So if you have any questions for me, I also have comments about the pharmacy side, because, you know, what we're doing here is we're trading a benefit. We're trading something that has no benefit to retirees. In other words, generics, brand name, almost always never offer a benefit to patients. The generics are as good and are equivalent to the brand name. And it drives, by ordering brand name medicine, it drives the cost of health care up. And there's a limited number of health care dollars to be spent. We need to spend them wisely. Colon cancer screening is a wise use of healthcare dollars, and spending them on brand name drugs that have no proven benefit over the equivalent generics is not a wise use of healthcare dollars. So that's the first point. And then the second point is, even if we didn't have the trade-off, colon cancer screening not only saves lives and prevents colon cancer, but in the long run, it saves our state and, you know, our state a huge amount of money, because it is far less expensive to screen people and prevent disease than it is to take care of colon cancer when it develops. It is an extremely expensive disease to take care of, and patients always suffer and die.
Any questions for Dr. Davis? Thanks again, Dr. Davis. Molly McCannon?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Good afternoon, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Molly McCannon, and I'm speaking for myself. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. In 1997, I was a state employee. I was 45 years old, and I was diagnosed with stage 1 colorectal cancer following a colonoscopy that was paid for by my state of Alaska health insurance. I was, in a way, I was fortunate because I knew my grandfather had died of colon cancer himself at the age of 45. A grandparent is a second-degree relative, and that's not supposed to be a big issue, but my doctor recommended a colonoscopy anyway when I had some very minor symptoms. I'm sure I would have ignored those symptoms completely if state insurance had not covered the procedure. Fortunately, I was able to be scoped, and my tumor was found early enough that I could have it surgically removed, and I was able to avoid radiation and chemotherapy treatments. I'm now 60. This is 15 years later, and a state retiree, and screening colonoscopies are not covered by my health insurance. This seems totally absurd to me. It's just amazing to me that preventing colorectal cancer and not just finding it early, it should be a major reason for supporting routine screening. This is the only cancer test that does this. And if you do find a cancer early enough, it's so treatable. Yet a colonoscopy itself is an expensive enough procedure that I think it's our tendency as humans to postpone or even avoid having it done until either a tumor is too large to ignore or the cancer is spread to other parts of the body. Treatments for colorectal cancer has improved significantly over the last several years, and as a result, there are now more than 1 million survivors of colorectal cancer in the United States. I really consider myself fortunate to be one of them, and I know it's because I was able to have my colonoscopy covered by health insurance. And I urge you to support this legislation so that there will be more survivors like me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McGannon. I'd like the committee to know that we've got Dan Wayne online from Legislative Legal. If at any point in time anybody has any questions for Dan. With that, we will go to one of my favorite people, Pat Luby. You on the phone, Pat?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP is in strong support of House Bill 275. Medicare now covers all TRS and PERS members who are over age 65 with free colorectal cancer screening with no copays, no deductibles. Through research, federal government has determined that colorectal screening saves lives and saves money. Early detection and treatment make good economic sense and good health preventive policy. Our active public employees can have screening covered, and as the sponsors indicated, inmates of our correctional system are covered. AARP believes it is only fair and good policy to include PERS and TERS, early retirees too young for Medicare. We urge your support for House Bill 275. Thank you.
Any questions for Pat? Thanks again, Pat. Emily, Dinan, are you with us? Dinan.
Yes, I am. For the record, my name is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. You've heard some reference already to the fact that we've been working on this issue for quite some time. It is true, as referenced in RPEA's letter, that I wrote my first letter on this issue for the American Cancer Society to Commissioner Matuszewski back in 2005. I'm hoping that we can get this resolved before I'm ready to retire. 2006, the state did pass House Bill 393 that required all state-regulated insurance companies, insurance plans, to cover colon cancer screening according to the American Cancer Society guidelines. What we found at that time were that a number of other plans that weren't regulated by the state went ahead and added the screening coverage at the same time. Providence Health System, for instance, is self-insured, but they went ahead and added the screening at the same time as the state law to effect. In January of 2011, Medicare changed their rules to cover 100% of the screening. So there's no copay, nothing for a secondary state insurance plan to pick up there. So we really are just looking at those 50 to 64. You've heard that colonoscopies are expensive. It's true. However, the recommendations are to get one colonoscopy for screening once every 10 years. When you average that out, they actually come out cheaper than mammography. So I just want to point that out. And all costs aside, it's time to take this step. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in Alaska and across the nation, and it's true that Alaska Natives have the highest incidence of colorectal cancer of any population group in the nation. When you catch colon cancer early at the localized stage, the five-year survival rate from colon cancer is over 90%. If it's not caught until it's reached distant organs, which is when symptoms are more likely to appear, the five-year survival rate is only 11%. With regular screening, it's estimated that half of all colorectal cancer deaths could be prevented with regular screening. I could go on, but you have all this information in your packets. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to regale you on... I thought I had heard all the colorectal puns until I heard Dr. Davis today, but there's always something new. I do urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
No, there's one that's been missed, but I won't bring it up. Thanks a lot, Emily. Richard Benavides.
Yes, yeah, this is Richard. Can you hear me?
Yep, you got a lot of friends in the room, Richard. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Richard Benavides. I'm here to testify on House Bill 275, as it represents the latest iteration on the issue of coverage of colonoscopy for retirees. So I want to thank both Representative Guerra and Representative Lynn for making certain that this issue keeps moving forward. I reviewed my testimony back in April, and most of those points are still applicable, so I'll just repeat the important ones. As many of you know, the reason I'm not in Juneau today is because back in 2008, literally a week before I was going to jump on the plane to come down for the session, I had a colonoscopy as part of a routine physical when they discovered that I had stage 4 colorectal cancer that had spread to my liver. Now, I was told by my doctor that persons with my diagnosis had an average life expectancy of 2 years. So do the math. Had I not had that colonoscopy in 2008, my testimony today would be this. In other words, I wouldn't be here. The 2 years would have already passed, and I would have probably not made it to this point. But because of the fact that I was able to discover that I had colon cancer, I've had the opportunity to have two major surgeries, two radiation treatments, 5 months of IV type of chemotherapy, and 3 months of oral chemotherapy. At the moment, I'm working with a physical therapist and with some nutritionists in something called oncology rehab, where they're rebuilding my core strength to be able to ensure that my immunity is built up and that I can fight off any recurrence of any cancers. So I think it's an incredibly important bill. Obviously, when I become a retiree, I would certainly like to be able to get another colonoscopy when my time rolls around for that. As a matter of fact, I'd like to be a retiree. So I think that it's important that the retirees who are over 50 get this colonoscopy, because this was, this bill makes sense. It'll save thousands of dollars by catching the cancer before it becomes more serious, And trust me when I say thousands of dollars. Even though I have this great insurance, I pay at least $10,000 out of pocket every year for my percentage of what I'm doing, just because of this, you know, between treatments and drugs and what have you, I have to pay a lot of money out. So I would please implore you to pass this bill, and remember that somewhere right now in this state there's a retiree who, just like me, has no idea that they have colorectal cancer. Let's try to help that person find that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Are you coming down at the end of the month?
You mean for that particular type of
yes,
that you guys do right around April the 1st? I believe I will be there.
Okay. We'll see you on the 31st.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Richard.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else online? David Oleweiler, are you with us? Probably close on your name. O-L-E-W-I-L-E-R?
Yes, it's Oleweiler.
Oh, okay. Thank you for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for participating.
Good afternoon. My name is David Oleweiler. I live in Palmer, and I'm a 56-year-old PERS retiree, and I worked for the municipality of Anchorage for 31 years. 5 years ago, at age 51, I received my first colonoscopy, and a polyp was removed. It was tested and found non-cancerous. This year, my doctor, who is following the American Cancer Association guidelines, recommended a follow-up colonoscopy. And I contacted AlaskaCare for a pre-approval, and this is when I discovered that AlaskaCare excluded this retiree health care benefit back in 2010. As Mr. Sika mentioned, the cost of my colonoscopy is estimated from $1,800 to roughly $6,000, and that depends on the results of the procedure. I cannot immediately budget 100% out of pocket, and without this benefit, I will have to delay my colonoscopy from 1 to 2 years while I budget for it. With the knowledge that most colon cancers do not cause symptoms until they advance into the later stages, it makes me extremely uneasy about delaying it. With every month that passes without having a colonoscopy screening, I feel like I'm rolling the dice with my own health. Making matters worse, I have 9 more years before Medicare will pay for my colonoscopy. All the information provided in HB 275 documents the life-saving benefits of screening colonoscopies, and others have already testified to that end, so I won't repeat it. But every single medical-related document that I have read urges Americans over 50 to have a colon cancer screening on a scheduled basis. Every article urges screenings before symptoms occur. My sources are the American Cancer Society, American College of Physicians, fightcolorectalcancer.org, and the Colon Cancer Alliance. HB 275 is an important piece of legislation as an Alaskan and as an Alaska Public Service retiree. It restores a benefit for a life-saving procedure. HB 275 is desirable to me also as a budget-minded individual because, unlike other bills, HB 275 contains a component to pay for restoring the colonoscopy health care benefit. So supporting HB 275 into law is a win-win for the state and for its retirees who served it, and it's also the right thing to do. I want to thank everybody who's contributed to bringing HB 275 to the hearing, especially Representatives Lynn and Guerra, and Mike Sika. And thanks for the opportunity for me to speak on HB 275.
Oh, thank you. And we have nobody else online. Is there anybody else in the room that hasn't had a chance to weigh in? I'm going to keep the public testimony open. We've got some material that just came in the last year or so that hasn't been dispersed to the committee, but anticipate that we're going to be able to bring it back up shortly. But we're going to hold the bill over and go on to the second item on today's calendar, which is House Bill 337, Board of Architects, Engineers, and Surveyors.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Lynn. Mike? So, want to sit up here? You want to?
Oh,
are you going to be doing all the work?
Who's going to
be doing the heavy lifting?
I'm going to be very short.
I'm representing Steve Thompson from District 10 in Fairbanks. And I'll introduce the bill, but I have a very knowledgeable staff person that will run through it with you, and we have a lot of...
That's why we pay them the big bucks.
Yeah, we have a lot of knowledgeable people online, too, that will be able to give us better information than what I can give. House Bill 337 revises the statutes governing the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, and to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. The revision will add a full-time investigator to specifically serve the board. My staff member, Lynette Berg, will further elaborate on House Bill 337.
Please. Thank you.
Welcome, Lynette.
Thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Lynette Berg, and I'm a staff member for Representative Thompson. I'd like to thank the chair and the committee members for hearing House Bill 337 today, an act relating to the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, and to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Since that's such a mouthful, from heretofore, I'd like to call it AELS, or AELS. It's a little bit easier for me to say. House Bill 337 revises the statutes to designate a full-time investigator, rather than a part-time, to serve the AELS board. This full-time position will ensure that the AELS board can meet the growing demands of oversight of the industries in its area of responsibility. Currently, the AELS board shares one part-time investigator with five other boards: construction contractors, home inspectors, electrical administrator, mechanical administrator, and storage tank workers. The investigator's oversight includes a total of approximately 20,000 licensees. Of these 20,000 licensees, 28% are AELS registrants. That's over 5,600 licensees for the AELS board alone. A new regulation will take effect within the next 30 days. 10 additional engineering professions that have not been previously regulated will be placed under the AELS board's oversight. Therefore, the number of branches will expand from the current 6 branches to a new total of 16 branches. Some of the newly regulated professions are from the structural, environmental, nuclear, and industrial engineer branches. This means the number of licensees the AELS board oversees will increase drastically. It is necessary for the safety of Alaskans to add these branches. However, the addition of these 10 branches will add to an already heavy workload for the part-time investigator. Each of the 6 boards that the part-time investigator oversees has an increasing number of licensees. The investigator faces mounting pressure to spend less time on the AELS board and more on the other 5 boards to which he is assigned. On top of the oversight workload, this sole investigator is required to maintain all knowledge of statutes and regulations of the boards he oversees. Clearly, the lack of a full-time investigator for the board could reduce its effectiveness in carrying out charges required by the state statutes and the regulations. An unintended consequence of overloading the investigator may result in a failure to fulfill to the fullest extent the state and regulatory charges. As a result, the state of Alaska may be put at risk and inadvertently create a hazard to public health, safety, and welfare. House Bill 337 will ensure that the AELS board can continue proper oversight of the licensees while remaining in compliance with all state regulations and all state statutes mandated by the legislature. As a result of hiring a full-time investigator, the AELS board will be able to maintain its reputation and integrity of the professions it oversees. That concludes my introduction to HB 337. I'll attempt to answer any questions that the chair of committee may have, but I do want you to know that there are very knowledgeable people present or online that could answer specific questions. Thank you.
I see at least one in the room that hasn't signed up, Colin.
That wasn't one of the issues you referred to.
Any questions for Lynn? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lynn, could you explain that you talked about the expansion of the engineering specialties are going to be moderated or managed or regulated by the board? Could you just briefly describe what the reason for that and what those are, what those extra specialties are?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, there are several professions, branches that have not been regulated previously, and it was noted that they are engineering professions that need to have some guidance to make sure for public health and safety. And they were reviewed by the board in a board meeting that they had their last, I believe it was at the end of 2011 or in February of this year. And they added those professions and branches to make sure that there was proper oversight of those 10 additional professions and to make sure that they were in compliance with state statutes and regulations.
I guess a follow-up there, if I may. Any confidence that just one investigator is going to be sufficient to, you know, that the significant increase in the number of professionals being regulated and investigated? Especially
at the
startup, there might be more investigations.
To the chair, Representative Sadler, if you're suggesting they hire two, I say yes. But since I don't speak on behalf of that, I believe that the one investigator, since he does carry quite a heavy load currently as a part-time investigator, I think as a full-time, having one full-time investigator, would the workload would be amenable to his ability to take care of it. I'm sure that if it was an overload and the profession started to grow astronomically, that the board would meet again and revisit this.
And
good question.
I would actually, and would, if this bill were to pass, would that investigator, would he need to resign from his other boards? Or, as I understand the sponsor statement, that this individual is actually a member, actually serves, I'm sorry, serves five of the boards as an investigator.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And would he be relieved of those responsibilities? Back somebody else, or?
To my knowledge, I think so. But I can't answer that specifically. Maybe you could ask one of the people that has more information on that.
We've got somebody in a couple minutes. Probably. Any further questions for Lynette? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Don, you got a minute? Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and I think I've got a feeling you've got an answer for Representative Sadler.
For the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. I believe there were a number of questions. Can I have them once again, Representative Sadler?
Sure. The Chair, Don, just what would happen if there's one investigator who is currently serving as the investigator for five other boards? If this bill were to pass, would he be assigned full-time to this? What would happen to the other investigating duties? Would somebody else be hired for the other five part-time board investigations?
Through the chair, Representative Sandler, the division would make a decision on whether current investigator is the appropriate choice for this particular board. Once that choice is made, he would go over into this new PCN if it's created. And then the division would have an existing position to fill from the vacant PCN, and they would do so probably through the job announcement network that they typically use.
Okay. Follow?
Thank you. Yes. Is there any indication that the individual is interested in taking on would be interested in taking on the AELS investigation position full-time?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. I believe we would encourage him to consider it from my perspective.
Okay. And kind of a previous question, too, would there be any increase the amount of investigations required given the expansion of the board's regulatory authority to the new branches of engineering practice?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I suspect that there will be increases. Only because the load on the investigative unit has increased over time. If you recall, there were a number of legislative audits recently that talked about timeliness in investigations, and this would be a way to begin to address those things. The alternative to that is looking at, for example, in FY11, we had 1,100 complaints come in. My investigators say on average a good caseload is 35 to 40 cases, and expanding that would allow us to address more of those instead of raising that kind of bar so that we did less and only did the more serious health threats, those kinds of cases.
Last question. I'd asked Lynette if one was going to be sufficient, so I'll ask you that question in your estimation.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, you might remember that we went through a fee increase suggestion in the fall, and we picked a price point, if you will, for a license that got a considerable public kickback. Part of the driver of that particular one were increased investigations, and sometimes those cases are just not predictable. Sometimes you can do a consent agreement, and that person says, yes, I made a mistake, I want to come into compliance, let's get it behind me. On the other hand, there are some legitimate issues that need to be resolved. Sometimes you take it through a hearing process, sometimes through the courts. Those get considerably more expensive. They're all unpredictable. All that to say, as the costs increase, licensees at some point say, I've had enough. Let's rethink the process. So you've got that balance point. And two, is it correct? I'm not certain, Representative Sadler.
Any further questions for Don while we got him up front? Thanks again for coming again. Seems like we had to give you a seat at the front table.
Only Linda.
Okay, with that, we've got at least one person in the room that wants to talk, and it's not Colin. Eric Erickson.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Erickson, representing myself. Thank you for this opportunity, Chair and Committee, to express my support for House Bill 337. I'm an Alaskan resident. I've registered professional engineer in the state, and I've served on the AELS board for about 3 years now. Through this time, I've had the opportunity to gather and gain knowledge on the investigation process and the growing concerns that have been expressed along the way that you've seen here with increasing numbers of investigations and the labor to support and follow through with those investigations. And as Don noted, if we can't get through them, we have to start with the priorities. So we start with the highest and deal with those first. And so there are several down there that just don't get reviewed. I believe there's been some written position papers that you've all received. One of them was in particular from our board chair. I've reviewed this and agree with it, especially the conclusions and recommendations. And I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to express my support for House Bill 337 and protecting health and safety of the Alaska public. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Erickson? Representative Sadler?
I guess I'll ask a general question. So is my understanding of the process is that the licensing fees will be adjusted upward to cover the additional cost of the amounts to another half, 0.5 FTE investigator, and do people in the engineering profession are willing to pay the additional licensing fees to cover that cost?
So speaking for myself, the fees will be, you know, evaluated, and whether they will change based on the investigator, I'm not real attuned to that, but if they do, I support them. I believe our state in general, again, without having acute numbers, I believe we have some generally lower fees than many other states, and I perceive to be doing a much better job in that arena, so I think it would be supported, personally.
Thanks again. Don, I wonder if we could get you back up for a minute. Could you state your name and affiliation for the record?
For the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
How would the fees be promulgated?
Mr. Chairman, the fees would be, first of all, state law requires us to do an analysis on the program, whether they're meeting, whether their revenue stream is meeting their expenses. If the revenue does not meet the projected next biennium or licensing cycle, it's a two-year cycle, then the division is required to adjust those fees and pass that cost on to the profession, in this case, the architects, engineers, land surveyor. I would, I believe the fees would have to adjust upward in order to pay for this position.
Anybody else want Don while he's up?
Couldn't be quiet.
Representative Johnson.
I hearken back to some complaints I had about the real estate board and their licensing being increased because the board expanded its powers, and one side of it was the board continues to grow and do more and do more and do more, and our license have tripled, doubled, whatever the number is. Do we have any checks and balances as to, you know, because government will grow to fill a void, and so what I'm concerned about is any board that we start, and it goes back to the statute, you know, we may have to address that at some point. There doesn't seem to be controls on the boards, and I'm not picking on architects and engineers. This is a general statement, and you know the real estate situation I'm talking about, where their fees I think went from up to 450, doubled or considerably increased. And you know, when I talk to realtors, they say the board's doing stuff that we really don't want them doing, and we're paying for it. So, is there any kind of checks and balances that are available to you or the legislature to make sure that some of these boards don't get out of control when it's just a pass-through, basically, to the membership? And is any control? And I certainly don't want to cast aspersions on any particular board, but it seems like one kind of went awry a little bit.
Sideways?
Sideways would be a good way.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. Law requires me to pass on the cost. So if I see a cost coming at us, I'm required by regulation or through the regulation process to label that cost and send it out for public comment. I think the check and balance is the public comment process, and I think we saw it work relatively effectively, although took a few bruises on that one personally over the real estate fee. However, I just think that's the only way it works given the current statute.
And follow up. And that brings me to the current statute. Would it behoove us to increase oversight of the legislature by changing that statute and making those appropriations based upon not the fees, and maybe, you know, bring the fees into the general fund and figure out a better way to skin this cat?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that's a great question.
You've got a great answer, right?
let me kind of respond with the sideways pathway. One of the things that I've heard, particularly since the dialogue over the real estate commission's fees, is how do we get perpetrators, for example, those that don't want to abide by statutes and regulations, more involved in paying their fair share of the cost. Currently, I don't see a great mechanism to do that. However, I think it's a great discussion point for the legislature, perhaps in a future session. So I guess the short answer, the sideways answer, is I think the discussion needs to continue. I don't have an answer precisely to your question today.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, professionals doing their job, the last thing they need is fees and licensing, and it's tough enough to do business in this state anyway. So I want to protect those entrepreneurs and those business people, from you know, licensing and anything onerous by the state. So I, for one, want to have that discussion, and I want to make sure that, you know, everyone's on board with this, because down the road we could be hearing from any number of boards, this one as well, saying they're out of control and they're passing on the fees, and so we've got an investigator now, and the investigator's doing more, it's costing us more, and it's just, like I said, government will expand to fill the void. And if we put 10 investigators on, they'd find work. And so I want to be cautious about this pass-through of boards, membership, and fees without any, I mean, there's no checks and balances. I mean, we have to justify everything before we raise money, before we raise fees. And it seems to me like there's just kind of a continue to grow, and it's on the backs of the business people that are paying those fees. And I want to be very cautious about that. And I know this is something that's probably needed, and this is probably not the place to fight the fight, but I will be, you know, watching all of these that come across, particularly anything that I deal with, to make sure that we're not saddling Alaskan businesses with more state bureaucracy than we need to. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Don, just so we're not going apples and oranges on this one, it was my understanding on the real estate problem that we had two large ongoing investigations that ate up a good portion of the money that was spent over the last two or three years, maybe longer. I think one of them was like a four-year-old investigation that went off in a number of different directions, and that I think is still open, to the best of my knowledge. But is that accurate or relatively accurate?
Mr. Chair, that is accurate. One of the cases, for example, I believe it's Superior Court at this point in time, and it continues to move forward.
Yeah, the both the money was spent on attorney fees rather than the original investigation, because we're picking up the dime, or the real estate is being charged back to the real estate commission.
Mr. Chairman, yes, state law requires if the expense happens to a particular profession. Regardless of what's causing or driving that expense, I have to charge back to the licensee.
And that's how we fix it, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I see how we can possibly go in a number of different directions on this, but Representative Sadler, you got something for
I could do it through the chair, Mr. Habegger. Just looking at page 2 of the bill, line 1, the second paragraph there says, shall at the request of the board conduct investigations. So my question is, can this investigator conduct investigations in opposition to the will of the board? I mean, that might be a check and balance there. If the board shall request investigations, so my question again, can the investigator conduct an investigation not at the request of the board?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would view this one also in line with, and I can't quite quote it, but it's investigative statutes in the centralized licensing statute. And there's a number of things that the division may do as well. I think this works in tandem. The board can direct this investigator, but I believe also the department, if they feel there is a violation to 08, whatever chapter is our architect, engineers, and land surveyors, and we would have a duty to investigate a complaint as well if we think it's in violation.
So to restate, so the board can initiate and direct an investigation. Likewise, the department can direct an investigation.
Yes.
Okay. One can't override the other, can it, and block an investigation?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it hasn't happened in my year and a half of experience.
Thanks again, Don.
Thank you.
We've got a number of people online, so I think we ought to get it out of the building, unless there's anybody else in the room, Colin, that would care to testify.
Gave to the pressure.
Mr. Chairman, if you insist. My name is Colin Maynard. I'm a structural engineer in the state and have served a couple of terms on the board of the Alaska Professional Design Council, which is an organization that represents architects, engineers, land surveyors, interior designers, and landscape architects. One of my roles on the first end of the board was the chair of the AELS task force to see what the industry felt about the AELS board and what they were doing right and what they weren't doing right. And one of the things that we felt that they weren't doing right was the investigations, that they were taking too long, that they weren't doing it as much as they probably should, that some people were getting away with things they shouldn't be because they fell out of the most important, or the AG's office just said that they had better things to do, so they wouldn't take the case. So, yes, the industry is behind getting this investigator, and we would pay additional fees if that, as long as we're getting what we're paying for. I've spent more time in this building asking you not to cut the division's budget than I have been trying to get you to decrease it, because we've had our fees go from 125 to 175 back to 125. It just jumps around now, partially because they don't have as many investigations one by annum and they have more the next, and they're trying to hit a moving target. And part of it is because they have a budget that keeps getting cut with everybody else's, even though there's no oil money whatsoever involved in it. It's all us and other licensees that are paying for that division. And we're willing to pay what it takes to get the job done. So, and if there's any other questions.
Representative Johnson.
That's a dangerous statement, Mr. Chairman. Willing to pay anything to get the job done.
Within reason, yeah. But the board, which is a bunch of licensees and one public member, in my experience, have worked very well with the Alaska Professional Design Council to make sure that we're all on the same page and that we're working towards protecting the public safety, which is what this board is about.
I have no questions. Mr. Chairman, my concerns, I think, are bigger than this one board, but they will probably be brought up every time we have any of the boards in front of us. It's going to take a bigger fix than we can do today.
Yeah, if you want to give the board a $50,000 fine instead of a $10,000 fine and make those people pay more, I'm sure the board would be perfectly happy to do that.
Say an amendment.
Because this is one of the big problems that goes to AG's office and it sits there forever because they've got bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. So if we can do a civil penalty that hits them a little harder than 10 grand, then maybe that would be one way to do it.
Yeah, perhaps this might be an issue that we work on this summer. If we're not down here in a special session, I'll enter them. But we
could. That's a good point.
Thanks again, Colin. Appreciate you coming up.
No problem.
It's like pulling teeth. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Well, then we're going to start out in Anchorage. Brian Hansen, are you with us? Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Hampton, resident in Anchorage. I am a professional mining engineer and a professional civil engineer, and I serve on the AELS board. I am supporting this bill. Just the sheer number of cases that our investigator has, he's got, I believe, 50 or so open cases now and double that are just awaiting him to look at to see if there's a case that needs to be opened. That means a significant backlog. As indicated earlier, our investigators spread across five other boards. That limits his ability to travel and do investigations for our board. So really, he is just covering the geographic areas of Anchorage, Mattsu. He makes one trip or two trips down to Kenai, Peninsula Borough, maybe a trip up to Fairbanks, and maybe a roundabout in Southeast once a year. So, you know, really what all we're covering is half the state, which I guess if we have half an investigator, that's okay. But there's a lot more engineering going on all over the state that is not getting looked at. Also, we cannot fully utilize the training opportunities that are available to us and that the board and licensees pay for. There are many opportunities for our investigator to go nationally and meet with other organizations that we are members of and receive training opportunities and kind of network with those folks. He's unable to do that due to both time commitments and travel commitments. So assigning a full-time investigator will help the AELS continue to support its mission of protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the public. It should also be noted that the cost would be borne by the registrant. And I would back up what Colin said about, you know, the fees. That maybe I wouldn't say we're willing to pay whatever it takes, but we're talking about a relatively insignificant increase. You know, if there's 6,000 people under our purview, and we, you know, just say it costs another $60,000 a year, that's $10 per registrant, you know, just to keep this into perspective. We're not talking about, you know, adding $20, $30, $50, $200 per registrant for this full-time investigator. So I'm in support of this bill and appreciate you considering it and taking my comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hansen. Any questions? Dale Nelson, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for participating today.
Thank you. My name is Dale Nelson, and I'm a registered professional civil engineer and have been registered since 1973. And affiliation is with the Alaska Professional Design Council, and more particularly the chair of the Legislative Liaison Committee. And I thank you for badgering Colin to come forward. He's a very active member of APDC, as you just heard. And APDC is a professional organization with member societies of the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers, the Alaska Society of Professional Land Surveyors, American Congress of Surveying and Mapping, Alaska Section, the American Institute of Architects, Alaska Chapter, American Society of Civil Engineers, Alaska Section, and the Anchorage Branch, the American Society of Landscape Architects, Alaska Chapter, American Council of Engineering Companies of Alaska, American Society of Interior Designers, and Structural Engineer Association, of which Colin is also a member. He just introduced himself as that. So this is the organization, the professional organization. It its membership is over 15, has a membership of over 1,500 and represents approximately 5,000 licensed professionals. And APDC LLC is very much in favor of this bill that's before you, and you've heard the testimony, and you'll hear continuing testimony to support this bill. And one investigator for the board would be in the right direction, so that it's the intention of the investigation of engineers, architects, land surveyors, landscape architects, etc. So with that, I will close and not take any more of your time, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, to have this opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any questions? Boyd Brownfield, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation. And again, thanks for taking time out of your day to join us today.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the House and Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Boyd Brownfield. I've been a registered civil engineer in Alaska since August of 1975. I have most recently served on the AELS board for 8 years, from March 2004 until March 2012. I support this bill. During my tenure as a board member, I served as the chairman for 2 years, and I served as the vice chairman for 4 years, two on each side of chairmanship. When I arrived in 2004, the board had two full-time investigators supporting AELS. Shortly thereafter, due to workload, we received an additional one-half investigator, or a total of two-and-a-half investigators. Today, our ELS has a similar or maybe even greater workload, but has been reduced to only one part-time investigator. And by this, I mean that our investigator has been assigned to five additional boards besides the AELS board, and effectively, what we now have is the attention of about 14 to 15% of one investigator. I would venture to say that because of our workload, we get a little bit more than 17%, and in my considered view, we have one of the most dedicated and efficient investigators within the investigative division. The fact is, AELS is the third largest of about 18 boards, nursing being the first, and barbers and hairdressers the second. We are larger than the medical board, yet they have their own investigator solely supporting the medical board, and that's exactly what we need. In addition to the workload, the fact that we have four separate and distinctive professions, we have in the engineering today, we have six separate and distinctive branches, soon to grow to 15 branches. We need our investigator, and we need him to be solely assigned to AELS, as I said before, much like the medical board has already accomplished. Now, I could go on my comments, but respectively, I could suggest or direct to the House Labor and Commerce Committee the written document prepared by the present AELS chairman, Mr. Harley Hightower. I understand this document has already been delivered to the committee. It is an excellent source document covering the important issues regarding this subject. And again, sir, I support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I believe we've got Harley Hightower for our next speaker.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Harley Hightower, and thank you for the time to discuss House Bill 337. I have worked in the profession of architecture in the state of Alaska since 1964 and as a principal architect since 1974. I am presently chair of the board of registration. I agree with most of the previous testimony, so if I'm a little bit repetitious, I'll try to be brief with it. I do support House Bill 337 for various reasons. For an inspector to stay current on the statutes and regulations, it's very difficult on one board, much less five boards. In addition, the approximately 5,600 registrants and additional 580 corporations are registered here, making us the third largest board. In 2008, to give you an idea of the growth we're experiencing, we added 220 new licenses and about the same in 2009. In 2010 and 11, that increased to 350 new licenses each year. And we certainly expect that to go up even further now that we have the additional disciplines being added. And the 50% of the state we cover is really talking about population, because we only cover a very small area of South Central Alaska, and so we're probably geographically we're not covering 10 to 15% of the state, and so that is another issue. And the board is prevented from performing the investigations and enforcement adequately to protect health, safety, and welfare of the public. And secondary to health, safety, and welfare, it is the exposure of liability for the state of Alaska and the board members. The cost associated with House Bill 337 will be covered by registration fees. And I would like to mention that our fees are very reasonable. I'm registered and have been registered in various other states, and I'm familiar with other fees. And And there's many fees that are a lot higher than ours, a few that may not be quite as much, but I would probably put us on the low average of a fee structure for a registrant. So the small amount that we would increase our fees would not be significant. And I'd like to thank you again for giving us the time to make this presentation.
Well, thank you very much for joining us and participating. If you left us do it on our own, boy, we could really screw it up, believe me. Richard Hiron. Are you with us, Richard?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for waiting so long.
No problem. Richard Hiron in Fairbanks, Alaska, a practicing land surveyor. Representing myself, speaking in support of House Bill 337. I've been an AELS board member since 2005, and one of the bad things about testifying a little later is all of my predecessors have talked to this House Bill 337 very well. I endorse all of those comments that have been made. I would just probably only add one thing that within the professions that we regulate, there is a perception that there's a lack of enforcement. And I kind of use an analogy of if you're policing a profession, maybe writing a speeding ticket to one individual will actually have an impact on anyone else that may even be thinking of violating regulations and laws. So it's important to make sure that everyone understands and believes that they're being watched and they should be doing the right thing. I would again just emphasize there's a perception of a lack of enforcement by our board, and we need to this House Bill 337 will go a long way and alleviating that. I would mention again, Brian Hansen indicated that the cost is minimal, absolutely $8-$10 per year per licensees. I don't think that that's too much money to ask to be able to try and protect not only the profession's reputation, all of the profession's reputations, but also protect public health, safety, and welfare. So with that, I'd please support House Bill 337, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Well, it looks like you've got at least one question, Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Yeah, Richard, thank you for testifying today. We heard from Mr. Hightower and a few of the other people speaking about how that the lack of an investigator has kind of limited to where there's really only investigation going on in South Central. Has there been any cases in Fairbanks or complaints that were not investigated because of the lack of a person to do them?
None that were made aware to me. I will say that there were indications of individuals that had violated regulation state law and were cited, and they actually, through the grapevine, indicated that enforcement was almost laughable, and that's not to throw any disparaging remarks on the investigative unit or the AG's office. It was just one of those things that there's not enough follow-up sometimes, and those two fellows ended up paying a substantial fine. But again, perceptions are that low lack of enforcement. Thank you, Representative Thompson, for the question.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks again. We're down to our last person, I believe. Bert Lemp. Are you with us, Bert, still?
Still with you.
Oh, thank you for waiting, and we appreciate you taking a portion of your day to join us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Burdett Lant, and I'm the sole landscape architect member of the AELS board, and it's been
6.5 years now that I've been serving on that board. I've been practicing landscape architecture in Alaska since 1975. Our profession was licensed in the year 2000, so we've got 12 years under our belt as registrants, those of us who did register, and there are more people coming along. There's a lot of interest in Alaska, and we need to help to keep these new entrants into our little profession aware of local conditions. We require an examination in Arctic engineering, also known as Northern Design, as a condition to get licensed in this state, which is a very, very unique and excellent way to introduce people to the unique problems in this state. We're dealing with a lot of major land issues and environmental issues in the design work that we do. So it's important for our profession to also be licensed. We're small in size, but we cover a lot of territory, and it is important, again, in the long range for what we do to have good licensure. My experience after being on the board for so long is that I have been concerned about the effectiveness of the enforcement program, the fact that our investigator has been spread very, very thin, and it's difficult for him to get out and cover everything that needs to be covered, and as a result, maybe some of the work that needs to be done in that area is not getting done. And I'm very much concerned about that, not just from the standpoint of landscape architecture, but for all the building professions. So we need to avoid such things as practice without a license, false advertising, construction that is not utilizing proper documentation on the construction site, things of this nature that inspectors would recognize, and not necessarily the contractors or the local inspectors catch. So I think it's important that we staff the enforcement personnel sufficiently. And I really appreciate the opportunity for our small profession to make the statement in support of House Bill 337 and urge your approval. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Is there anybody else online? Is there anybody else in the room? Seeing none, we will close out the public testimony and bring it back to the committee. And I think the first thing I'm going to add is, I don't know, I've been on this committee at least 6 years, and it's the first time I've had a group come to me saying that we want to pay more for something, and we want to be have stronger self-policing of our industry, and that's a tough one to argue with.
We got nothing.
Anybody else? Any comments?
Right.
Well, I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you, unless the sponsor wants to do it. I would like to move House Bill 337 out of committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
And the bill will move out of committee, and I believe we found something to do for part of our summer vacation. Thanks again, and we will adjourn at 10 minutes to 5.